William Sloan Coffin was the preaching minister at the Riverside Church in New York City for many years. He was an eloquent preacher, but he was also fiercely opinionated and independent. After a very long marriage, he was divorced. And his friends were distressed and saddened because he had withdrawn into himself. And he wasn't talking with anyone about the pain. This was especially troubling to his friend, Rabbi Abraham Heschel, who's the famous Jewish philosopher, theologian, and mystic. In his book, Once to Every Man, Coffin tells of their first meeting as after the divorce, as they walked down a New York City street. Slipping his hand under Kaufman's arms, he said, "I understand, my friend, that you have gone through much suffering." And Coffin replied, "Yes, Father Abraham, it's been agony, and it still is. You should have called me. You were in California all summer. You still should have called me. I didn't want to bother you. And besides, I didn't want to talk about it over the telephone. You made a mistake, my brother. You should have called me. I could have helped you." And with that, Coffin became slightly irked. And he stopped and he turned and he faced Heschel and he said, "Okay, how could you help me?" And Heschel, in his Jewish body language, raised his shoulders and held open his palms, and he said, "I would have told you about my father, the great rabbi, God bless his memory, who was also divorced. You see, you Christians are always so vexed by perfectionism, and it is always your undoing." And then Coffin writes these words, "As we talked, I felt tears starting down my cheeks. For Abraham was right, and it was wonderful that a Jew was reminding a Christian that his salvation did not come by being sinless, rather by accepting forgiveness." We're entering territory here which is bedrock stuff, the very bedrock of our faith. And that is that we are accepted by that which is greater than us, great in the name of whom we do not always know. We are accepted unconditionally. God's grace is available to all. Forgiveness is there for all who ask. And life is unattainable without sin. Or should I say that life without sin is unattainable? You know, there will always be two kinds of people in the world: saints and sinners, lifters and leaders, workers and slackers, winners and whiners, stumbling blocks and stepping stones. And to that, we can add two more kinds of people: those who forgive and those who don't. Those who forgive tend to be the people who live out of a sense of plenty. They live as though there is enough of everything. There's always an extra plate at the table. There's always time to listen. Always. There is enough love and kindness and compassion and forgiveness for everyone. They live with open hands and with open hearts. The unforgiving, however, are misers. They have this attitude that there are low stocks of everything. There's no room for the extra plate at the table. My time is too precious. I have other pressing things to do. We do have to look after ourselves, you know. And their posture in life is with closed fists and ice-cold hearts. Now, both of these outlooks you will find in today's gospel lesson from Luke. Simon the Pharisee has invited Jesus to a dinner party, and Jesus is kind enough to send an RSVP. But as the dinner date approached, Simon was getting a little bit antsy because there was very little with Jesus upon which he agreed. And Jesus had this penchant for creating scenes in the most inconvenient times. Well, it was after the dessert course had been served that Jesus proceeded to instruct Simon in the finer points of hospitality, which apparently had been shown to all of the other guests. For some reason, he had been neglected. No one washed Jesus' feet when he entered the house. No one gave him the customary kiss and put a drop of fragrant oil on his forehead. But you see, not minding his hospitality manners was not the real problem. Those were just symptoms, because Simon's home was devoid of compassion, devoid of generosity, and, as you will see, devoid of forgiveness. Now, back at that time, whenever you had a distinguished guest in your home, it was customary after the meal to open the door so that anyone from the neighborhood who wanted could gather around, perhaps to see through the door or could hear the conversation that was going on inside. And by the door that evening, there stood a woman. Everybody knew her, but they never called her by name. They always referred to her by the generic sinner. Luke doesn't go on to tell us the nature of her sin, other than to say they were many. But her actions contrasted so much with Simon's. She could not stand at the door any longer. She went inside and she knelt at Jesus' feet. Now, Simon shunned sin, but she, in people's eyes, was sin personified. When Simon wasn't praying, he was immersed in the scriptures, but this woman didn't know the Talmud from a taco. But she at least knew what was necessary at that party. And kneeling at Jesus' feet, she wet them with her tears. She let down her hair and wiped them. She kissed his feet and anointed them with oil. And there sits Simon saying, "Goodness gracious, what is this? What does this woman think she's doing? Smooching his feet." Years ago, I was invited into the home of a Greek Orthodox family for dinner. I don't remember how the invitation came about, but it was always a time of honor whenever the priest would come to your home for a meal, and there were certain customs that were practiced. They, knowing I was a pastor, considered me a priest. So I rang the doorbell, and they opened, and there stood the whole family, George and Anna, and all of their children, and their grandchildren, and the grandparents, and the aunts and uncles. It was like a scene out of my Big Fat Greek Wedding, if you remember that film. And starting with George, every one of them came to me and bowed, and they kissed my right hand. Now, you should be writing this down, by the way. Bill Everett would say, no way. And I have not been greeted like that since then. You know, here's this woman. She did not say a word to Jesus, and Jesus made no attempt to stop her. Now, Simon had invited Jesus, perhaps thinking he was a prophet, but all that went out the window. Prophets condemn sin, and if he was a prophet, he would have known who she was. And so what did Simon do but go through an inventory of all of her sins? She was out in public without the accompaniment of a male. She touched a man and defiled him. She let down her hair, which was considered an erotic act. But she did what tightwad Simon did not do. No washing of the feet, no kiss, no oil. Now, Simon was the guy whose salvation depended upon all of his strenuous efforts to lead a sinless life. He felt little need of forgiveness, so therefore he had little to extend. But here was this sinful woman who was forgiven much, who gave much. And so while Simon is having a hissy fit, saying, "Goodness gracious," here is this woman responding to Jesus' gracious goodness. In his book, What's So Amazing About Grace, Philip Yancey said this, and I've got this one memorized because it is a gem. He said, "There's nothing you can do to make God love you more. And there's nothing you can do to make God love you less." God wants to convert misers of forgiveness to being practitioners of it. Now, you remember the old hymn, "Oh, how deep are the riches of grace. How great is the love Christ has shown when he stood in the poor sinner's place. No love like his ever was known." And so, let us find ourselves in this story. Who are you? Now, before you answer that, I already have the answer. Because we all play Simon Says. We're too smug. We're too into ourselves. We're too out of touch with God. We're too happy splashing around in the spiritual kiddie pool. We're too lazy to go deeper. We're too comfortable keeping the church on cruise control. We're too tight-fisted with forgiveness. We're too stingy to celebrate when a life is turned around and inside out by the grace and the forgiveness of Jesus. I wonder what became of Simon. Was Jesus able to crack the door of his heart open just enough to let the light in and to change him? God's grace is inexhaustible, and we cannot ration it. We cannot portion out a little here and a little there and give to this one and withhold from that one, because the surest sign that we have received and accepted the forgiveness of God is not to stay wrapped up in it, but rather to extend that forgiveness to others. Every Friday evening, an old man walked from his home out to a pier carrying a bucket of shrimp. He sat on a bench at the end of the pier, and he slowly distributed the shrimp to the birds who were always waiting for him. It was his expression of thanks. His name was Eddie. Captain Eddie Rickenbacker, 1942, during World War II. His plane became lost, and it went down in the South Pacific. They all made it through the crash and into some lifeboats. But then began their harrowing fight with the sun and sharks and waves, and most of all with hunger. They prayed all the prayers they knew how to pray, and it seemed like the end had finally come. Rickenbacker was asleep with the cap over his eyes when something woke him up. Something lit on his head. It was a seagull. Everyone else in the boat had their eyes fixed on that bird, but no one else could catch it. They didn't know how to wake him up to get him to get that bird, but he was awake. And he knew what was there, and ever so slowly, he moved his hands up and snatched it, and they ate it. It wasn't much of a meal, but for them, it was manna from heaven, and with the entrails, they were able to fish and catch fish and survive a little longer and a little longer until they were rescued. The old and hunched over on Friday evenings, Eddie took a bucket of shrimp to feed the birds as an ongoing discipline of telling God, thank you, because he had been given much. And it was his way of making a return. St. Paul said, where sin abounds, grace abounds all the more. We have received much. Goodness gracious, have we received such gracious goodness from the Lord, whose forgiveness is given in order to flow through us. There is always enough if we would just believe it and be willing to act upon it. I'd like to now show you a clip from a movie called The Ragamuffin Gospel. It was based on a book by Brennan Manning of the same name. Have any of you ever read it? Good. Okay, somebody read The Ragamuffin Gospel, because it is all about grace. Brennan Manning was a Catholic priest. He was also an alcoholic who was in treatment for many years. And he discovered something in the process of all that. Again, that foundational bedrock thing that we can all hold on to. And I want you to listen carefully as he speaks.
Hey, can I play you a tape?
What is it?
This is preacher, Brennan Manning.
In the 33 years since I was first ambushed by Jesus in a little chapel in the mountains of western Pennsylvania, and the literally thousands of hours of prayer and meditation, silence, solitude in those years, I am now utterly convinced that on Judgment Day, the Lord Jesus will ask one question and only one question. Did you believe that I loved you? That I desired you, that I waited for you day after day, that I longed to hear the sound of your voice. The real believers will respond and say, I believed in your love, and I tried to shape my life as a response to it. But many of us who are so faithful in our ministry, our practice, church going, I'm going to answer, well, frankly, no, sir. I never really believed it. And there's the difference between the real believers and the nominal Christians that abound in our churches across the land. No one can measure like a believer the depth and intensity of God's love. But then again, no one can measure like a believer the effectiveness of our gloom, our pessimism, our low self-esteem, our self-hatred and despair that block God's way to us. Do you see now why it's so important to lay hold of this basic truth of our faith? Because you're only going to be as big as your own concept of God. We make God in our own image, and he winds up being as fussy and rude and narrow-minded, judgmental and legalistic and unloving and unforgiving as we are. I've been in churches in Bangor, Maine, Miami, Seattle, San Diego, and St. Louis, and honest, the God of so many Christians I meet is too small for me. Because he is not the God of the Word. He is not the God who is revealed in and by Jesus Christ, who at this moment comes to your seat and says, I have a word for you. I know your whole life story. I know every skeleton in your closet. I know every moment of sin and shame, dishonesty and degraded love that's darkened your past. Right now, I know your shallow faith, your feeble prayer life, your inconsistent discipleship, and my word to you is this. I dare you to trust that I love you, just as you are, not as you should be, because none of us are as we should be.
Bro, what's up? You all right? Rich.